Greetings and welcome to the KOL call on mesitinib and severe asthma hosted by AB Science. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Alain Moussy, CEO of AB Science. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this web conference about the recent results of masitinib in severe asthma. It's my pleasure to welcome you and to present this data. I will be and will present it in a structured way, so you have the agenda here on the screen. I will introduce, of course, the participants, in particular the key opinion leader who will deliver this data. We will talk about the previous and these phase III clinical results, and we'll discuss the masitinib positioning in the future, and we'll leave it open for your questions. Next slide. So with me, I will be assisted by three key opinion leaders who know the masitinib clinical development in asthma: Pascal Chanez, Professor of Medicine at the University of Marseille, and he was the leading author on the first phase IIa with masitinib and participated to this phase III study. Professor Lavinia Davidescu, who is a professor of medicine at the University of Oradea in Romania, and he was the international coordinator of the study. And Professor Israel, who is professor of medicine at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and also professor at the Harvard Medical School, and who is active also in the masitinib clinical development program. From AB Science, I'm assisted by Laurent Guy, who is the Chief Financial Officer, and Professor Hermine, who is the Chief Scientific Officer of AB Science and also a co-founder of AB Science. Next slide. So I will leave it to Olivier to present the scientific rationale of the development of masitinib in severe asthma.
On slide five.
On slide five.
Okay, on slide five. Hello, everybody. So masitinib is a selective kinase inhibitor which has been developed to block mast cell activation and mast cell migration and mast cell differentiation. And masitinib is able to block three main kinases, which are KIT, wild type, which is very important for the mast cell migration and activation, and two other kinases, which are FIN and LIN, which are also highly involved in mast cell activation. In addition, we have shown that by blocking the MCSF receptor, masitinib block also some part of macrophage activation in periphery, but also in macroglia in the CNS, which is not the main goal of this topic today. So masitinib is highly selective because it blocks very few kinases besides the KIT, FIN, and LIN. And interestingly, it's also an oral administered drug, which is safe and usually well tolerated with no major side effect, including it's not carcinogenic and has no cardiac toxicity. So because it blocks mast cells, and it has been shown in the previous literature and well known by the KOL and a lot of specialists involved in asthma, that mast cells play a critical role in allergic reaction and anaphylactic reactions, and also in inflammatory disease, including the one in the lungs and in the bronchi. And it has been shown that mast cells may play a critical role in immediate hypersensitivity, but also in late phase of inflammation, which may lead to a tissue remodeling of the airways of patients involved with asthma. Mediators such as tryptase and cytokines from mast cells can modulate the airways muscle, smooth muscle cell function, which may induce an hyper-responsiveness reactivity to some antigens in patients with asthma. And we know that also that mast cell infiltration in the bronchi and may play also a role in this hyperreactivity and hyperresponsiveness to allergens. So taken together, mast cells contribute significantly to the development of multi features of chronic asthma in mice, but also probably in patients. And finally, mast cells play a critical role by producing inflammatory cytokines, which may induce the development of late airway hyperresponsiveness in patients with asthma. So to demonstrate this rationale, we have used masitinib in a well-established model of asthma in mice, which is induced by sensitivization to ovalbumin. And as you can see on the slide 7, when we treat mice which have been sensitized with ovalbumin, when they inhale ovalbumin, they have high hyper-responsiveness to the bronchi, which is significantly reduced by the treatment with masitinib at dose that we can achieve in humans. And very interestingly, in addition, on the right side of this cartoon, you can see that masitinib reduces the eosinophil recruitment in the lungs, which is one of the main cells which is involved in the physiopathology of asthma. So here we showed that in the classical model of asthma in mice, masitinib may reduce both the bronchoconstriction and also the eosinophil infiltration. So I will move to slide 8, and I will leave the talk to Alain Moussi.
Thank you, Olivier. The clinical development program is comprised of actually three clinical studies. First study is a phase 2A proof of concept, where we recruited 44 patients, and which will be described soon by Pascal, and Pascal was the leading investor with Marc Humbert. It is published in 2009. Following this proof of concept, we entered into a first pivotal study, which is the one we're going to discuss today, called AB07015, which recruited patients with severe asthma uncontrolled by oral corticosteroid. And we recruited 420 patients, and we're going to go into more detail today. Then there is another study which is still not read yet, which is AB14001, this time recruiting patients with severe asthma uncontrolled with high dose of inhaled corticosteroid and with elevated eosinophil levels, which has recruited 347 patients, and the recruitment is completed, but the results are not available yet. That being said, I will pass it now to Pascal Chanez, who is going to present you the data.
Okay, if I can see the next slide, please. Okay, that is a slide on our initial study. This study was a proof of concept study, and the drug was used in very severe asthmatic patients taking oral corticosteroids on a long-term basis, having a lot of exacerbation and consider having uncontrolled severe asthma despite all the available treatments at that time. And the main issue of this study was a decrease in oral steroids, which was able to be achieved in 30% of the patients treated with the drug as compared to the placebo, where we were unable to win any patient. And as an exploratory criteria, we were able to decrease, despite these winning of steroids, a number of exacerbations. But clearly, this proof of concept study was not powered to explore this as a primary outcome. So this study was able to confirm that the drug can act and help the patients with the most severe form of the disease. And secondly, it was the tolerance and the safety profile was acceptable on a short-term basis. So it was an interesting study to go on with the development of the drug. Next one, please. So now I will speak about the last study, which was able to enroll more patients. And once again, it's a double-blind placebo-controlled randomized study. The population being treated is once again the most severe patient. That is to say, patient with a definition of severe asthma receiving on top of used treatment a small dose of oral, continuous oral corticosteroids and remaining uncontrolled despite this treatment. It's a multi-center study enrolling patients in European countries and non-European countries. And the primary outcome was the reduction of exacerbation. And there was a secondary outcome, that is to say, to explore other aspects of the severe asthma, such as control, quality of life, and respiratory function. Next slide, please. So the population was 419 patients. All were randomized, but some patients were excluded because they were found to have not profiled. And at the end, we have a decreased number of patients being analyzed, and we separated the analysis, including the number of eosinophils being seen at inclusion. Next slide. Next slide, please. So that is the main result, and the main result is positive. As you can see, if you compare patients being exposed to masitinib as compared to placebo, it was a significant decrease in the number of severe exacerbations as compared to the placebo, and it is significant with a reduction of 35%. And the duration of exposure was the same in the two treatment arms. Next one, please. One important question was if the way we exclude some of the patients may affect the result. And as you can see on that slide, it does not change anything, because when you see the result, the full analysis, or to intend to treat, the result was exactly the same. So there was no impact of patients being treated with less than 7.5 milligrams per day. Next one. One other problem was to speculate about the differences in the baseline treatments according to the centers, and we compare in that particular slide. And we demonstrate that in European countries, the message was that masitinib was able to perform better than in the other countries, indicating that in the most severe population receiving the long-term treatment, because we can always ask about the baseline treatment of patients being untreated, but the result was more important, and the impact of masitinib on the prevention and decrease of exacerbation is comparable in that particular subset analysis, as we can see with all the other biologics in development. Next one. Next one, please. So the severe asthma exacerbation were exactly the same according to the number of EOs, and in patients with more than 150 EOs, we did not, if we restrict the data on that particular population, the results were exactly the same, indicating that masitinib is covering the large number of patients with a T2 type severe asthma. Next one. So the next question was about safety and overall the number of adverse events or serious adverse events and non-fatal were comparable according to the two populations in the placebo-treated or in the masitinib-treated patients. And for
ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. Our conference will begin momentarily.
Lost me. Can you hear me now?
Yes, you may now begin.
Yes. Can I have the next slide? The last one was the safety. Okay, so the discussion, most of the patients were severe, recurring oral steroids maintenance therapy, and there was a wide range of EOs in that particular study. And the patients were on oral steroids without any effort to be weaned, and despite this, the number of eosinophils were large. According to the number of eos, there was no change, and clearly there was a reduction in severe asthma exacerbation rate, and this reached the same amount as it was seen in most of the biologics treatment in the European countries patient. So, next one. Next slide, please. So I pass now the lead to Alain once again.
Thank you, Pascal, for this presentation of the key data of the study AB7015. Now we're going to leave it to our three experts. Starting with Lavinia. Lavinia, we are on slide 18. You can introduce yourself again to describe your role in the masitinib program and then give your opinion on this data. Lavinia? Now maybe Lavinia has problem to connect.
Lavinia, can you please check to see if your line is on mute?
So Lavinia might have a problem to connect, but she was there. So Pascal, we'll go to you. Time that Lavinia comes back. So we'll move to slide 20. And again, it's.
Can you hear me clearly now?
Perfect, Pascal. You can go.
Okay. So I was involved in the proof of concept study, and now I was involved to see and to discuss the main result of this study. Next one, please. The 21, Alain, please. Can you give me the next one? So
you
clearly, it's needed to have other way to treat severe asthma. As we are expecting a very fantastic time. And from the data I show you, we are expecting an interesting profile in this patient with the most severe disease. Clinically, exacerbation is a very important event. And to my knowledge, the data we saw today are interesting and can be confirm in real life. So it's important to have a reduction in asthma exacerbation, and the data issue from the EU standards confirm the impact, as we have already seen with other biologics. And so it's important because the mechanism of action of masitinib is different. And overall, the safety profile is good and is confirmed most of the data obtained by ABCN so far in different diseases. So it's important to have a drug targeting another aspect of T2 inflammation, and even so, is targeting non-T2 patients, where at present, it's difficult to treat this patient. And it can be clearly discussed that this drug will be on top of patients insufficiently controlled by the current biologics, or to replace some of the biologics, or to be first line in some non-T2 patients. So clearly, it's important to accumulate more data, but the development of this drug is interesting and promising. That's my point.
Thank you, Pascal, for your analysis. And maybe we can continue with Elliot. And we'll conclude with Lavinia. Elliot, it's your turn. We are on slide 22 for an introduction of yourself.
Sure. So I was asked to comment on these results. My interest relates to severe asthma, and I published research of ours for a federally funded study that I led with imatinib, which is a kind of precursor, if you will, to masitinib. It also blocks the KIT inhibitor, and we studied that in severe asthma and showed that patients actually had a reduction in airway hyperresponsiveness, twitchiness that characterizes asthma and that persists in patients with severe asthma. And we also, our data in a small study of only 60 patients suggested that actually the drug might be effective even in patients with low T2 inflammation or low eosinophils. So on the next slide, please. So my assessment is similar to Pascal's, which is that the mechanism of action is highly relevant to severe asthma, and it could potentially address unmet needs for those with asthma. In particular, there's still a need for alternative therapies in asthma. None of the drugs prevented most of the exacerbations requiring systemic corticosteroids, and actually these studies in these studies with anti-IL-5 or anti-IL-4/13 therapy, actually, while they're very effective, they seem to be effective in a specific population, and even in the population of patients who have high eosinophils or have high T2, probably only about 2/3 of the patients actually respond. So there's a reason to want to develop therapies that actually work in by a different mechanism. And there may be potential advantages of working on a different mechanism if one doesn't work on eosinophils. The other part is that KIT inhibition and KIT-dependent processes through mast cells really contribute to the pathologic basis of disease of severe asthma, as has been shown, and I think I was mentioned before. Masitinib blocks airway inflammation, improves lung mechanics in feline models of allergic inflammation. In our publication, where I was the senior author, we showed that c-KIT inhibition decreased airway hyperresponsive mast cell counts and tryptase release, and actually it also improved airway function. So I think this is a exciting set of results in that the patient population actually had a significant improvement. What I found even more intriguing, although it's still tantalizing and hasn't been proven yet, is that more than a quarter of the patients here had low eosinophils, and they responded as well. So I think in terms of thinking about positioning of masitinib, so in addition to the positioning proposed by Pascal, I think there's a possibility, which would need to be proved, that this might work in the area where there's less of an indication for these anti-T2 therapies, in the 150 to 300 eosinophil range, and certainly in the possibility of patients with less than 150, where these drugs seem to be much less effective. So I think that there's a potential here for both patients who fail, and we think that 1/3 of patients with high eosinophils don't really respond. And then there's the whole group, and the group of patients who are less than 300 in severe asthma are about half the patients with severe asthma. So I think that's still a large unmet need in terms of severe asthma.
Thank you, Elliot, for your analysis. Lavinia, are you there? Can you connect? I ask the...
Lavinia, is your line on mute?
Lavinia, if you're on mute, can you switch? Seems that we have a problem with to connect with Lavinia.
You don't hear me?
Oh, yes, you are there. Sorry, my mistake. Lavinia, it's your turn. So we are on slide 18. You can introduce yourself again and then give your analysis.
Okay, I'm an assistant professor at Faculty of Medicine, University of Oradea. I am a member in the boarding of the Romanian Society of Pulmonology, and one of my main interests is COPD and asthma. And I was in this study the coordinator investigator on masitinib in study AB05015, severe asthma control with oral corticosteroids. Next slide. The results were positive for masitinib, also for the safety profile. Masitinib is first in the class based on the new mechanism of the action. First positive large phase 2 and 3 tyrosinkinase inhibitor and with mast cells as therapeutic target in severe uncontrolled asthma. This study proved, our results prove that efficacy is demonstrated in general population of asthmatic patients. This drug works not only on allergic asthma population with high EGA level, not restricted to severe uncontrolled eosinophilic asthma, but to all population of severe uncontrolled asthma. Also, this drug have the advantage of oral administration that could be a factor to a very good adherence to the therapy in asthma population, and also prove a favorable safety profile. The adverse events was comparable with placebo. No anaphylaxis reported or infection at this masitinib, but we need a confirmation study for this.
Thank you, Lavinia, for your opinion. We'll try to conclude in a few slides, and we move Laurent to slide 24. So on slide 24, we try to summarize the differentiating factors as compared to the other compounds registered. The first one, obvious one, is that masitinib is an oral treatment. It's a tablet, whereas the other ones have subcutaneous or intravenous. The second one is the mechanism of action. That's important. The anti-IG or anti-IL-5 or anti-IL-4, the biologics, they target different things. Here we have for the first time a mast cell targeted compound. Mast cell is not new in asthma. It's a very well known involvement of mast cells, but there has not been a large study like that with a compound targeted mast cells to prove the efficacy of this strategy. And so we are happy to deliver through this study a first evidence of the relevance of this target as a therapeutic target. Then in terms of phenotype, that's very important. We know the biologics are effective in high eosinophil and the omalizumab in the allergic patients. Here we have a broader scope of phenotypes addressed in this study. Then in terms of the percentage of patients being uncontrolled by oral corticosteroids, but that was the design of the study, so it's 100% in this study. We know that in the other development, they have also studies who targeted this kind of patients, but in a winning design. But when it came, when it was not this design, there was a fraction of each study with OCS, but it was, of course, not the majority. So it's an interesting study that differentiates from the previous ones that that we have seen in the development of new drugs in severe asthma. We go to the next slide. The next slide is the potential positioning of masitinib in severe asthma in the coming, development. So just listening to the experts, to the key opinion leaders at the call, we try to summarize, and we have different possibilities there. Masitinib could be positioned in severe asthma, insufficiently controlled by the biologics. There are patients who are not sufficiently controlled that range from 30% to up to 50% sometimes, and in this population, maybe masitinib can have a benefit. So that could be explored in single agent or in combination with biologic. That would be, of course, the high eosinophil with the limit, the threshold above 300, and it would be so in a sort of line two or after biologics. The second positioning could be in severe asthma in what we called the vulnerable zone of the biologics. It's a sort of gray zone. It's the zone where the eosinophil are not high, not low, but really a little bit in between, which is between 150 and 300. And this is a significant number of patients. Here, the study are not as clear as for the high eosinophil threshold above 300. And in this population, to be discussed, of course, with the different agencies, there might be a possibility to position masitinib, because clearly in this study there were a limit above 100 and, and 50, which is positive. And then the third one would be in severe asthma, but not in the type 2 inflammatory phenotype. So this is the difficult patients to be treated, of course, and it could be defined by a less than 300 threshold or less even than 150 eosinophil threshold to be, of course, discussed with the authorities. So we think the three are possible. It needs to be discussed with the experts. We need, of course, to dig into the data further. It needs to be discussed with the regulatory bodies. But we can clearly see that there are populations that could benefit from this compound. And I would say not in competition with the biologics, but rather complementary to the biologics, which of course made a significant improvement in the treatment of these indications. And I will conclude with a last slide, which just will give you the protection that we have with masitinib. So masitinib is protected with a use patent until 2032. The composition of matter and synthesis patent protects it until 2028, as the ones who know masitinib already know. But here in asthma, we are protected with patent delivered until 2032, which gives us enough time, I would say, to continue development if needed. Thank you for your listening, and then we'll open the sessions to questions, and I will try to answer them.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. You can either email your questions to questions@lifesciadvisors.com, or if you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for your questions. Once again, it is star 1 if you would like to ask a phone question, or you can email your questions to questions@lifesciadvisors.com.
We can also take questions by email for the ones who prefer written questions. We have received a few, apparently, and Laurent will take them. But in priority, the all questions, and then we'll go we'll read your written questions.
Well, maybe I will take a first question. It will give some ideas to the audience. How accepted is that mast cells play a central role in asthma? If they are so important, why has it not been a target of previous drugs?
It's a question for the KOL. Who wants to start?
Eliot, maybe?
Sure.
Eliot?
Sure. So I think that part of the reason is that corticosteroids have been the major therapy that's been used in asthma, and eosinophils and these type 2 inflammation are much more obvious. There isn't a good way, or there hasn't been a good way, to enumerate mast cells and to understand them, whereas eosinophils circulate in the blood, and the association between eosinophils and asthma has been known for more than 100 years. So the eosinophils are always suspected to be important in asthma, and so they became obvious targets for asthma treatment. Mast cells, because they're resident in the tissues, are actually very hard to detect in the blood. There are advanced techniques that can detect immature mast cells now in the blood. But so it was much harder to define that. It took biopsy studies, and those biopsy studies actually showed that, for instance, if you compared patients who had something called eosinophilic bronchitis, which is a lot of eosinophils in their airways, but no evidence of asthma, and you looked at those patients as compared to patients with asthma, that the difference was mast cells and mast cells in the muscle, mast cells in the smooth muscle and the mucosa, again suggesting that mast cells might be important, but that took a lot much longer time to develop.
Yes, I agree with Elliot's comments, and I will say that the interconnection between all the cells within the bronchial are clearly dismantled by the use of biologics. And we can see that even some patients respond beautifully to anti-IL-5. And now we have patients with no EOS at all exacerbating from asthma. And then the potential role of mast cells as resident cells to connect between the epithelium and the smooth muscle to favor the chronicity of the disease and the severity of the disease can be focused on, and this sort of trial will clearly demonstrate the interest of mast cells in some of the patients. Clearly, that there will be a differentiated phenotype of patients where the role of mast cell will be more prominent.
Okay.
Thank you. We do have a phone question from Kay Nakay with Chardan Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. A couple questions. First, what additional data analysis are you going to do with this study?
Yes. Not sure I understand the question.
Yes, clearly, control daily symptoms, asthma, quality of life, and lung functions will come and will complete the data set and the data finding.
And do you have an expected time frame to have that data?
They will come for hopefully for to be put in a late breaking abstract for the next ATS meeting.
Okay, very good.
That will be in May.
Okay. In terms of a follow-on study that the company might conduct, how might it differ, if at all, from the design of this study?
Pascal or Elliot, you want, or Lavinia, you want to take
I
that?
I don't understand the question.
The next study will concentrate on severe asthma without being treated on long-term basis by systemic steroids. It will be severe asthma with high dosage of INADE and long-acting beta-2 and not receiving on a long-term basis oral corticosteroids.
Okay. For Alon, do you have an updated time frame to report the top line from the other asthma phase 3 study?
It's always difficult, but no, we don't have a precise timing. It will be next year. The recruitment is finished, but we don't know when we're going to receive the data, but clearly not in the coming months. So we'll report when we have them.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further phone questions. Do you have any other questions that were emailed?
Yeah, we can take this question. How does this population that you tested compare to the trials used for approval for the drugs that are listed in the presentation, so the biologics? So I repeat, how does this population that you tested compare to the trials, the biologic trials?
So this is Elliot. So the general approval populations were not similar to this, as pointed out by Laurent. There were several trials where patients on oral corticosteroids were tapered, And the results you were presented were not of a tapering, but they were patients with oral corticosteroids. The populations were similar in the populations coming in. The design in terms of what you saw today was different in that this was only not a steroid taper, but just in the context of maintaining the steroids at the same level. Those were the data that were analyzed and shown today. But those populations were different. They were the same. Were similar in that they were patients on oral corticosteroids, so in that regard, they were very similar.
Yes, clearly, it's an original population being treated with long-term oral steroids without any attempt to wean them. And despite this, there was uncontrolled, unable to enter the study, and then the exacerbation rate was different. So clearly, the second study will be interesting to see because the population will be more comparable with the development of biologics. But clearly, the study will be in combination to provide evidences about the efficacy and clearly the safety of the drug.
I have another question. Were you surprised that the screening criteria required two events in the previous year, yet you ended with less than 0.5 event per year?
No. This is Elliot. In most of the studies that have been done in severe asthma, the patients who are screened have to have one or two exacerbations, and usually while they're in the study, they have less than half the number of exacerbations that were reported in the prior year, and that has been attributed to being in a study where you're monitored more closely and or a potential placebo effect.
Yes, I agree. The carryover effect is very important in clinical trial. But clearly here...
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. Our conference will resume momentarily.
Just to follow up on the last question, so there is 0.5 exacerbation in the placebo, but when it comes to the EU country, which is the data we give on slide 14, the number of exacerbation is 0.9, which is higher, so contributes to the center effect. More questions, Laurent?
Sorry, I was disconnected.
You can go on, Pascal.
Yes, I was just saying that the carryover effect is important, and in that particular study, the placebo effect is not so strong. And so we can consider to go on with this kind of result. And clearly entering a clinical randomized control study is not trivial. And so most of the other parameters of the control of asthma are clearly better controlled.
Okay. More questions? We can take the following question. Do the percentage of patients with high eosinophils in your trial mirror the percentage among severe asthma patients in the general population? I repeat, do the percentage of patients with high eosinophils in your trial mirror the percentage among severe asthma patients in the general population? So, we first of all, we have not given publicly today the breakdown. So it's a question which is hard to answer. But you can try of approximate it by calculating the number of patients in claim one or claim two versus the overall population. So, and it depends what cut we take for the high eosinophil. But definitely, there were a percentage of patients above 150 eosinophil. That's to help Pascal, Elliot, and Lavinia to answer the questions that were, let's say, around 60-70%, and less than 150 is let's say 30%, one third. So, having that in mind, does it reflect the general population suffering from severe asthma? I leave it to the three KOL.
When we will have all the results, we can modulate the response according to the level of EOS. But clearly, as mentioned by Elliot, there is a subset of patients with low EOS which are able to respond. That is clearly an unmet need in the field of severe asthma.
Yeah. I think as I'm mentioned to elaborate on what Pascal said, in the U.S. Severe Asthma Research Program, about a half of the patients on high-dose inhaled corticosteroid and a long-acting beta agonist who would meet the criteria for severe asthma, but not on oral corticosteroids, about a half of those had eosinophil counts less than 300.
Okay, maybe a last question, Laurent?
No more.
To conclude?
No more.
Okay, is there a last question oral?
There are no further phone questions. If there are
okay.
No other questions,
so,
I'll turn the call back over to you for closing remarks.
Okay, so as a conclusion, well, first, before the conclusion, I would like to thank the audience to participate to this call, and a special mention, special thank you for our experts who we share the data with and help us to analyze them. And we are happy to have brought a new, potential indication, provided that there are additional positive data to this first one in severe asthma with masitinib. So we are happy to have that. You know that we had also positive phase 3 in mastocytosis and in amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. So they are very different indications, but the mechanism of action, the targets of masitinib makes it possible. That's another story, and that would take some time to Olivier, Chief Scientific Officer, to explain that. But we are happy to have that. So masitinib has potential, has options for future labeling. We need to confirm, of course, but this is exactly what we're going to do, and we're going to follow the advice of the experts in the field. So I would like to thank everybody, and we'll continue the masitinib program up to registration. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.